Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Hey folks, just wanted to give you a heads up that there's a little bit more background noise in this podcast than usual. Do not be alarmed if you hear children speaking or crying out. This is just our first live podcast from a local preschool. Just part of the public service that we provide the community. Just kidding. It was someone's kids.
Hello, and welcome to the Ultrasound Gel Podcast. My name is Jacob Avila, and I'm joined by Michael Pratt and Cray Bolger. And today, we're going to talk about a study that all three of us are pretty excited about. It's entitled Rapid Cardiothoracic Ultrasound Protocol for Diagnosis of Acute Heart Failure in the Emergency Department, and it was published in 2017 in the European Journal of Emergency Medicine. Now, Mike, why are we excited about this? I mean, how many studies have there been that talk about looking at heart function, maybe looking at a little ultrasound of the lungs, maybe a little IVC? What makes this exciting and what makes it different?
Well, you might think this is just one of a billion different protocols that you could do to diagnose acute heart failure in the emergency department. But what we liked about this article in particular was they were a little bit smarter, a little bit more nuanced about it. They thought, hey, let's stop looking at the systolic function.
What?
Yeah, what really matters is just the pressure in the left atrium, and that's what is gonna cause that pulmonary edema to be part of their presentation. So why don't we just focus on that instead of looking at everything else?
Dude, I can't even. I mean, my mind is blown. You're telling me they didn't even look at the systolic function? They didn't care what the ejection fraction was?
No, who cares?
Oh my goodness. So the way that they did this is they enrolled around 100 patients, and they had some exclusion criteria, which makes sense. They excluded those with known pulmonary fibrosis because those can generate B-lines. Those less than 18 years old, those with mitral stenosis or prosthetic valves in the mitral valve, those were all excluded. They had a single operator, one dude, that had done a little over a thousand examinations previously with the echo. And what I like about it is that their examination, and that is the heart and the lungs, all took less than 3 minutes. Mike, what was their gold standard? How did they double check this guy to make sure he was right?
The gold standard was one of two criteria, either a comprehensive echo that showed signs of structural heart disease, or the combination of a BNP over 100 plus signs of pulmonary congestion on a chest x-ray, or just a BNP over 400. And we're talking nanograms per liter there, Jacob.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. You always got to worry about those units, because if you just say 100, 100 what? 100 elephants? 100 airplanes? You got to use your units. It's very important.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about the actual intervention, what kind of scan they were doing. They called it the CATUS.
CATUS.
Cardiothoracic ultrasound. You know, with these acronyms, it's starting to get a little bit more and more where you can kind of just pick out whatever letters you want of the words.
Right, like some are uppercase and some are lowercase, so you can just like
Exactly. Make
up, like add a random consonant or vowel to make it work.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. So it's the hubris of humans, I think, to just do whatever exactly. We want.
So what this ultrasound protocol was, the patient was sitting there supine, in a semi-Fowler's position, if you will. And they tried to keep him on their back because they knew that even if you put him in left lateral decube, it might change some of their filling pressures. So that's a key point I took away.
Yeah, I didn't actually know that, so I'm glad they put that in there.
Yeah, and then they took two lung fields per side. Both of these were anterior, one kind of at close to the apex of the lungs, and then a little bit lower in what they called the mammillary region. Both of those were in the midclavicular line, looking for B lines. And then additionally, they did do of some pulmonary views in the axillary line, laterally, looking for pleural effusions. And then as far as the cardiac ultrasound, they looked at the heart and measured a E to E prime ratio. Jacob, do you know how to do that?
So what you do is you stick your patient supine or left lateral cubitus, you get an apical four-chamber view, and you stick your pulse wave Doppler through the mitral valve. So you want to do it actually a little bit ventricular to the mitral valve and get a measurement there. You should get an E wave and an A wave with a measurement there. And then you also want to get the tissue Doppler reading as well. So you have to hit the TDI, that's tissue Doppler imaging, button on your machine and basically get the same measurement off of one of the annuluses. You can do the lateral or the medial annulus depending on what you're going to get the best signal from. So then that is going to be the E prime velocity, the tissue Doppler, and then your capital E is going to be the actual mitral valve inflow velocity. And then you look at the ratio of that, and then that's how you get that E to E prime ratio. Sounds complicated, but it's really just two measurements that you're doing using tissue Doppler and pulse Doppler. Not too complicated.
And the cool thing about this that they mentioned is that this is a surrogate measure for the left atrial pressure.
Brilliant.
And as opposed to other echo measurements of atrial pressure, this one is pretty consistent regardless of the rhythm that the patient is in. So maybe they're in an irregular rhythm, such as atrial fibrillation, which is pretty common in these patients. This would still fairly accurately represent that pressure. And that's why we thought it might be a good measurement for diagnosing CHF exacerbations.
Although they did do the measurement slightly different if they weren't in arrhythmia. So what they did is if they were in a sinus rhythm, they did they averaged out three measurements. And if they were in something like AFib, then they did the average of five instead of the average of three. So with AFib, you're not going to really be in diastole consistently every single time because the rhythm is irregular. So they measured out five. So important.
So when they were doing that E to E prime ratio, the number they were looking for there was 15. A ratio greater than 15 counted as a positive exam. And so overall, they also did the IVC. They added in the IVC thinking if they are really in an acute exacerbation, that should be pretty distended and plethoric. So they tried to factor that in to see if that helped in addition to their protocol. But their exam was counted as positive if they had a positive lung exam, which meant that they had bilateral B lines or bilateral pleural fluid, or if they had the E to E prime ratio greater than 15. So Cray, now that we know exactly how they did this and that it took them less than 3 minutes, how well did this perform? What were the results?
So they had 100 patients, 52 of them had acute heart failure. Their primary outcomes, so the cardiothoracic ultrasound protocol had 100% sensitivity and 95%, almost 96% specificity.
That is crazy. And that is, these guys were like, I've said this already, but they didn't even care what the ejection fraction was. They didn't even care, you guys.
Screw the EPSS.
Yeah. Guys, let's not be too symptoms. Sensitive. Let's not be too sensitive.
So B lines alone, which I think a lot of practitioners use to kind of say heart failure or not, performed fairly well. 96.2% sensitive. Specificity drops pretty significantly, only 81% specific.
That hurts my feelings a little bit.
But it's still better than chest x-ray.
You've hurt my feelings.
The E to E prime alone, so using the ratio and looking at if it was greater than 15 or not, was 100% sensitive, almost 85% specific. And then when they add in the IVC, when you have a plethoric IVC and your cardiothoracic ultrasound confirming it, you had a sensitivity of 40.4%, but a specificity of 100%. Confusing.
Interesting. Also, what's confusing is what sepsificity means.
Yeah, I'd noticed that spelling error.
Sepsificity.
What else did they find in this article, Gray? Anything else interesting?
No.
All right, let's move on.
So I think of note, BNP, which I think, thankfully to recent literature, is kind of falling out of practice, was confirmed that maybe it, as a standalone test, should continue to fall out of practice. So 23% of non-heart failure patients had elevated BNPs greater than 400. 50% of them were over 100. So depending on what type of practice you're running, if you just say the BNP is positive, they have heart failure, in this case 50% of the time you'd be wrong. So using a BNP in isolation kind of failed the test here. They found bilateral B lines in almost 20% of their patients that did not have heart failure, So that's kind of sad for the fans of thoracic ultrasound.
Yeah,
which myself is. That's my like favorite thing to do.
But you know what?
Run to the bedside.
Like I've noticed that recently though. Like the more that I do it, the more I realize that like especially in the
everything gives beelines.
Yeah, and it, especially in like the older population, like they're like 60, 70, 80 years old. I often even anteriorly will see random beelines that I later like they don't amount to anything, which
yeah
kind of depresses me. But it's also like okay because. You know, that's how this whole thing is evolving.
So cool thing here is time was not a factor. All these exams were completed in less than 3 minutes and that there was 100% intra-observer agreement. So I think we take that
it's pretty good
user dependency out of the picture.
Although it's a little bit unclear because I thought only one person did the scan. So maybe that's why there's 100% because it's the same guy agreeing with himself.
That's true.
Well, maybe they're blind reviewing. They did use a blind cardiologist review when necessary, which is pretty cool.
A blind cardiologist would be a tough standard when reviewing these echoes.
Blinded cardiologist? Sorry. Yeah.
So the only other thing I noticed was that a lot of these patients that they diagnosed with something else, like pneumonia, the pneumonia ones had focal beelines in 4 out of the 5 patients, and then the patients that ended up having pulmonary embolism, 4 out of 5 of those had signs of right heart strain. They also found some other things like a dissection causing tamponade and a chordae tendinae rupture causing cardiogenic shock.
That's kind of a big deal.
Which is a great place to reference the dyspnea differential diagnosis article that we're going to quote from ASAP.
Exactly. So it's not just heart failure you can see when you're looking at these undifferentiated patients. So just real quick, talking about some of the limitations we mentioned, maybe their gold standard isn't the best diagnosis of heart failure using the BNP and chest x-ray, which we know are both flawed in the way that they can accurately diagnose heart failure. This was a pretty skilled operator who seemed to be a pro. He may have even been a cardiologist. That was a little bit unclear. Some of the authors were in the Department of Cardiology, so I couldn't really tell if he was or not, because it does reference emergency physicians doing it later in the discussion, so hard to say.
Well, I think that would also bring into play that maybe their thoracic ultrasound wasn't their primary comfort level, because outside of point of care people, that's not a common practice necessarily. I think that also brings into account, like, when you talk about your gold standard and then we get sad about things like the beelines not being great and the IVC not playing out. But part of it is our gold standard really the right gold standard? Which, as much as I love these results, part of me says, but where's the left heart cath? Like, I want to actually know these pressures and have some solid answers to say, yes, this really is good. And without a true gold standard, it makes me feel a little wishy-washy about the results.
Well, let me recap everything we talked about. So in these patients in the emergency department with undifferentiated dyspnea, they ended up enrolling 100 patients and about half of them had acute heart failure. They found that their combined cardiac and thoracic ultrasound exam had a 100% sensitivity, 95.8 specificity, which seemed to be much better than either beelines alone or combining it with IVC, with the exception that if you include a plethoric IVC, it has a increase in the specificity to 100%. So the take-home points from this article, in my mind, is that measuring this E to E prime ratio seems very accurate for diagnosing acute heart failure. And in this study, it was both sensitive and specific. So might want to start thinking about that when you are doing point-of-care echoes to make this diagnosis. I would like to thank our authors for doing this, and thank you for listening. If you want to check out more, go to ultrasoundgel.org. You can follow us on Facebook, Google+, tweet to us, or just come up to us at a coffee shop, shake our hands. We'll talk to you later.
More pressure, more gel, more pressure, more gel, more
ultrasound gel podcast.
I'm a hugger. Like, I take your bubble and I squish it, stomp it, and pop it like bubble wrap.
What does that mean?
Dunskies.